Thanks, George. Great job.
Yeah.
I think it's so funny the blend's going to Bakersfield. I'm from Bakersfield. I grew up there. And, I like to say it's a good place to be from. And I've managed not to live there for most of my adult life. But it's going to be a great time. So send your kids, support it. They'll have a blast. They got a super cool spot reserved up there. So, anyways, with that, good morning, everyone. Again, good morning to those joining us online. I see you. Glad you're here. So good to be here with y'all. If you're new here, just FYI, this church is not the Andrew Collins Show. I'm just a volunteer. Once a month, you'll see me up here doing music, and once maybe every 2 or 3 months, I'll be speaking. It just so happened that leading worship and preaching lined up on the same day for me. So you won't see me up here for a while, but I know a lot of folks here are conscious of hogging the spotlight too much, and I'm feeling a little bit of that today. Today, we're continuing with our teaching series on what is known as the Sermon on the Mount in the Gospel of Matthew. The Sermon on the Mount, that title doesn't actually show up in the Bible, in the text. That's what it's kind of come to be known as by Christians. But this sermon is likely actually a collection of Jesus's greatest hits, so to speak, from his ministry, compiled conveniently in Matthew chapters 5 through 7. And as I've read through the Sermon on the Mount in preparation for today's teaching, one angle that really stands out to me, that's going to inform a lot of my message today, is that it seems like, again, just one piece of this is Jesus is really inviting his disciples into a radical integrity when it comes to our spirituality, our relationships, the way we live, exist in the world. Throughout these teachings, Jesus pushes back against false moral posturing of all kinds. He calls out saying long, wordy prayers just to be noticed, giving to the poor as a public display of one's own righteousness. And he calls not just for right action, but right intent. It's not enough to not commit adultery, but also not to lust, and so on and so forth. And he offers us, and this is where my title for today's message comes in, an invitation to live with radical integrity. Now, before we jump in, I do want to acknowledge real quick that these are not easy teachings in the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus seems to set a pretty high bar. A lot of people say it's impossible. He sounds pretty idealistic at times. Other times, some of these things he says are very cryptic and mysterious. It's not immediately clear what he's saying at first glance. And so that means as we study this, and the teaching team so far has done a really, really great job of this, as we've unpacked these teachings from the Sermon on the Mount, there's going to be struggle as we tangle with this, as we try to hash this out, and that's okay. For my day job, I'm a high school teacher, and I tell my students all the time that I'm all about the productive struggle. That's how we learn, that's how we grow. And as a good teacher, as our divine teacher, I think God is all about the productive struggle, too. There's so much grace for us as we try to work this out. So, hope you can take a big exhale, and we'll struggle through this together, and hopefully find some healing and wholeness for ourselves and for the world in the process. All right, let's have a look at our text for this morning, This comes from Matthew 7, 1 through 6. I'm using the NIV version here. Sorry, this is getting in my periphery. Is it still picking up okay? We're good? Okay. All right, Matthew 7. Jesus says, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces." Oh boy. All right, so in this section, Matthew gives us three really succinct, pretty tightly packaged teachings from Jesus. We have one about judging others, one about hypocrisy, and then there's this somewhat, I think somewhat cryptic warning about throwing your pearls to pigs, which I found kind of flummoxing as I was like sitting with this, but we'll get to that at the end. But first, let's look at Jesus' teaching here about judgment. I just want to focus on these first couple verses here. And I'll read it one more time. "Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." All right, now I first want to start here with a few important qualifiers of what I think Jesus is not saying, because this is one of those texts that I think can easily be misconstrued and manipulated. What Jesus is not saying here is that we're free to become bystanders and to ignore speaking out against injustice. He's not saying that we should give up our responsibility to prevent harm, to intervene. And looking at the last part of the teaching there that says you'll be judged the same way you judge others, I don't think Jesus has divine retribution in mind here. I don't think he's threatening that God is going to be the one to come and judge us the same way we judge others. And if you look at the Sermon on the Mount as a whole, I think he's actually saying just the opposite. If you've been coming to Liminal for a while, you've likely heard the diamond metaphor that we're so fond of here. And that is this idea that the gospel, scripture, God, all these parts of our faith tradition are like a diamond with different facets. And as we rotate it, we can see and appreciate different dimensions of this mystery we're trying to understand. And so just because two people are seeing and appreciating different sides of the diamond doesn't necessarily mean one of them has to be wrong, right? We can look at this from different angles and discover, again, different truths, different aspects, and insights. And I want to do that right now with this first part of the text about judging and look at just two different facets of this, two angles I think we can take on this that are pretty insightful. So in terms of why Jesus teaches us not to judge others, here's facet number one, my first one for you. We often judge others as a way to mask or avoid confronting our own faults, insecurities, and weaknesses. And to illustrate this, I'd like to share a personal example from my life, and then I'll give you a chance to reflect on whether this might ever happened to you in your life. Okay, so when I first moved to Ventura a few years ago, kind of regretting sharing this right now. No, it'll be fine. There was this lovely young woman who I'd been talking to, and I was really into her head over heels. And sadly, about a month after I moved here, she broke things off, said, "Sorry, I'm not into it," and that was that. Fast forward a few months, I was still kind of hung up on her. She started dating this guy. And every time I would cross paths with them, which happened sometimes because we had a lot of mutual friends, so at a social gathering or something like that, every time I'd cross paths, and you know how we do this, I would just kind of observe them and, you know, kind of that overanalyzing, like, all right, how are things going for them? Are they happy together? What's the vibe? And anytime I was in one of these situations, I found my heart getting so critical towards this guy that she was dating. He was more quiet and reserved, usually didn't say much, seemed kind of passive. And I just to myself, I was like, dang, like what does she see in this guy? What is it about him that's so great? And I really began feeling quite judgmental toward him. And then one day I had this realization. Of course there was jealousy there, like he had this woman's affection and I didn't, and I envied that. But more than that, I realized that all these things that I judged in this guy, that he seemed quiet, passive, unengaged, boring, all of these criticisms actually reflected things that I don't like about myself. For much of my life, I've been insecure about my ability to socialize, to think of things to talk to people about, to ask good questions, to make new friends. And when I saw these quote-unquote faults in this man who was dating someone I wanted to be with, my heart turned to judgment. Now, this happened a couple of years ago, but in preparing for today, I've spent some time thinking about it, and I can see now that there actually was a beautiful lesson in it for me. Because what I was really critical and angry about was, okay, how could she possibly love a man like this, someone so quiet and passive and withdrawn? How could a person like that be worthy of love and romance? And underneath that was this unspoken belief, this insecurity, this fear I had that I was unworthy of love and relationship because I had those faults. And when I finally named that, I had to step back and say, no, I am still worthy. I don't have to be socially competent, the life of the party, whatever, all these things to be desirable. I'm lovable just the way I am, just like this guy was. But if I'd remained in a space of judgment, if I'd stewed on my resentment, I never would have seen that. And so this command from Jesus, do not judge, is actually an opportunity for freedom for us to deal with our own shadow, our own insecurities. Anthony DiMello, an Indian Jesuit priest and psychotherapist, has a great question for when we find ourselves in these moments of judgment towards others, right? And they happen all the time. So here's what he says. He says, every time you find yourself irritated or angry with someone, the one to look at is not that person, but yourself. The question to ask is not, what's wrong with this person, but what does this irritation tell me about myself? So the next time you get angry or irritated with someone, go think about that. In fact, actually here, give it a try now. I'll give you just a few seconds, see what comes up. Think about someone that irritates you, that makes you angry, and ask yourself, just for a few seconds here, not what's wrong with this person, but what is this telling me about myself in terms of what I'm getting irritated about? All right. Anyone want to share what their judgment of others reveals about their own insecurities? Just kidding, though. But hopefully you get the idea, right? To have that posture of, oh, wait, and am I projecting something? Can I turn in words and look, okay, what is this bringing up in me? What is this exposing about me that I need to deal with in my own heart? So that's the first facet of this teaching around judging others that I think is really insightful. I have one more I want to look at here, the next one, facet two. And it is that judging, when we judge others in the way that Jesus is warning us against here, it often results in labeling and over-identifying people with their faults. In her book about the Sermon on the Mount, the New Testament and Jewish scholar Amy Jill Levine, I forgot to bring a copy of the book, but as the teaching team, it's one of the resources we've been using in this series. Amy Jill Levine, in this book about the Sermon on the Mount, connects this teaching of Jesus about not judging others to her experience teaching inmates at a maximum security prison, basically. And she says, from her experience working with these students, that they would often remind her that their crime was not the sum total of who they are. And they would ask, would you want to be judged by, or even known by, the worst thing you've ever done in your life? I think all of us would answer, no, of course not. Nor would it be fair to do that to someone else. But how often do we actually do this in our society, in our culture? Especially prisoners, right? They're known by their crimes, murderer, rapist, thief, etc. But can we really judge that? We're not God. We don't get to have the final word on a person's worthiness. We can't make the ultimate determination of what is in someone's heart. Ultimately, only God can do that. And that's why, I think for us, with our limited perspectives, judging can be so harmful. And that's one reason Jesus comes against it so strongly here. The last thing I want to address here in this teaching about judgment is this warning Jesus gives. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And it kind of sounds like, again, depending on how you read this or maybe how this this text has been presented to you in the past in other church contexts, it kind of feels like fear-mongering almost. He's kind of saying, all right, you better not judge or else. But I don't think Jesus is talking about, again, judgment from God here. He's already established that God the Father has a loving disposition towards everyone, right? God sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. Jesus also calls us to love our enemies, presumably because that is what God does. God loves those even when they're opposed to him. So this isn't a matter of divine retribution, I don't think. But it does offer a piece of really practical, just real-life wisdom. The great traditions of Eastern thought have this idea of karma, right? Which is that you often tend to get back what you put out into the world. You reap what you sow, to use a metaphor from the New Testament. And oftentimes the reality is this is how life works. To use a very childish example, when children are learning how to play with others, they discover, hopefully pretty quickly, that if you pinch someone, what's going to happen? They're going to pinch you back, right? And probably even harder and more painful than what you did. But sadly, this behavior pattern doesn't necessarily change a whole lot when we become adults, does it? We may get more sophisticated, more subtle about it, but we still do it. We still find ways to get people back. But what Jesus is saying here is, look, if you treat others with judgment, Rachel, I can mention this, we were just chatting about this earlier, you know, if you put out that energy into the world, that tends to be what what comes back to you, what gets reflected back. If you assume poorly of someone else's thoughts and intentions, if you try to tear them down, they're likely going to respond to your own judgment in kind. And so in that sense, in a real sense, in the same way that we judge others, we tend to get judged. That's physics. That's how things come around. Tends to be what happens. But Jesus, of course, calls us to a better way, right? Where rather than perpetuating judgment, we break the cycle with kindness and forgiveness and curiosity, and by doing the work to heal ourselves. So that's the danger of judging others. But it still leaves us, or at least leaves me, with this question, and maybe you're thinking this. At some point, we do have to make moral judgments about others, right? Like, we can't live in a state of total moral relativism. Like, oh, I can't judge, so people can do whatever they want. Right? That's not what this is about. On the contrary, in the biblical narrative, we actually see a very strong prophetic tradition of calling out wrong and injustice. So there is a place for that. Jesus does that himself many times. So the question is, how do we know whether we're judging rightly, right? Whether we're falling into this trap or actually rightfully calling out injustices, wrongs in the world. Let's look at the next part of our text and see if we can get some more insight into that. So moving on, talking about hypocrisy, Jesus says, "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." Okay, so for starters, I think this is one of Jesus' teachings that's actually pretty straightforward. Make sure there isn't a freaking log in your own eye before you try to call out the trifle that someone else is dealing with, right? So at a very obvious level, we see Jesus calling out hypocrisy here. And it's pretty easy to get on board with the main idea here, right? This isn't a terribly controversial idea. No one likes hypocrites. This seems to be pretty instinctive for us as humans. Hypocrisy, it flies in the face of our sense of justice. Again, as a high school teacher, I work with teenagers, and boy, oh boy, do they have a nose for this, right? "Mr. Collins, you let so-and-so do that, why can't I do that?" And they have this really strong radar for double standards, right, for hypocrisy. And I think that's generally a good thing. But here's the funny thing. It never works in the opposite direction. Like, I've never had a student come up and say, "Hey, so I know so-and-so got caught copying answers down. I don't want to be a hypocrite, so I'm just here to tell you that I cheated too, and I think I should have some consequences for that." Just so things are fair. Right? Like, that, funny how that never happens, right? And I bring that up because I think this is where Jesus' teaching really has some teeth, right? He's not just saying, watch out for hypocrites, or make sure to call out a hypocrite when you see one. So we already do that pretty well. Just turn on the news for 5 minutes, right? We don't really need a sermon telling us how to do that. So rather than framing it as this external warning about hypocrisy that's out there, Jesus calls his listeners to, in the words of 12-step programs, to take a fearless moral inventory of their own lives and their own actions. He calls us to turn inward, to be aware, as the old saying goes, that when you point the finger at someone, you have three fingers pointing back at you, right? So while we can and should make moral judgments, Jesus gives us this vital step before attempting to do this, right? He invites us to this radical integrity and uses really hyperbolic, really strong, exaggerated language to drive the point home, right? The image we get is this little speck of sawdust, little minor irritation, not a huge deal, something bugging our friend's eye, contrasted with, I think I once heard a pastor call it like a telephone pole, like use that imagery. Like it's like if you have a telephone pole in your own eye and there's a little like speck of dust in your brother's eye, which I love. It's this big hulking thing, right, that's so obvious to everyone else. But it's often when we're in the middle of it, when we're the ones being the hypocrites, it's often not so obvious to us in the moment, is it? Maybe painfully obvious to others, but it's much harder to see and identify for ourselves when we're activated, when we're agitated in the middle of it. Which is, again, why I think Jesus puts such an emphasis on it here. In the men's group here at Liminal, we recently finished going through this book by Richard Rohr called The Tears of Things, which I highly recommend. Very timely, and it the main gist of it is it takes this deep dive into the biblical prophets and looks at what it means to be a prophet or to have a prophetic spirit, which is not mainly about like predicting the future or stuff like that, but it's more about speaking truth to power, having this voice to call out oppression, injustice in the world, in society, and among your own group, whether it's your own church or nation or community. And one of the things that Rohr emphasizes in this, talking about, okay, what makes a prophet effective, what are the qualities they have, which I hadn't fully appreciated before, was that he says it's so important for prophets to wrestle with, their own shadow, or their own sins, their own close-mindedness, their own egos, before they could get to a grounded and healthy enough place to effectively speak truth to power and call out injustice. I didn't have time to look up a great quote from the book, but to paraphrase, to kind of capture the gist, Rohr argues that prophets in their mature state have to be aware of their own psyche and to know their own strengths and weaknesses before they can step into the fullness of their calling as prophets, before they can start calling out the wrongs happening out there, right? They had to find their own inner integrity so that their own faults wouldn't cloud their judgment. And I think that's what Jesus is calling his disciples to here. So to return to this question of, okay, what's the difference between the judging that Jesus condemns here and the good work of prophetically speaking out against injustice, Jesus shows through this metaphor of the dust speck and the plank that it comes down to whether or not someone has done their own inner work first. As our Buddhist brothers and sisters are fond of saying, and it's so cliche, but I think it's true, if you want to change the world, start by changing yourself. And then as you've done that, in that work, you'll be ready to actually go out and be a force for healing and justice in the world. Force for bringing about that shalom that we talk about so often here, that flourishing and abundant relationship with all of creation. All right, let's turn to the final part of our text this morning. Do not give dogs what is sacred, Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces. All right, so first off, I'd be remiss not to give a shout out here to the best comic strip currently running, Pearls Before Swine. Note that I didn't say ever. Don't stone me. That obviously belongs to Calvin and Hobbes. But the best comic strip currently running, Pearls Before Swine, hands down, which obviously gets its title from Jesus' teaching here. And you can see here, this is one I found, an example of casting one's intellectual pearls to the character pig there, right? So, super string theory, yeah, just comes out of a can. But it actually, like, a lot of these comics do kind of play with this idea of what Jesus talks about here, and that's why it's so funny. But anyways, there's a sort of a standard reading, and Jared, you can go back to just the text, the slide before, just for a second. There's a sort of standard reading of this passage that I'd like to first acknowledge and push back against. This reading, and if you grew up in church or come from a church background, maybe you've heard some version of this. Kind of the traditional understanding of this text is that we may have, what it's saying is, we may have certain treasures, perhaps of truth or service, knowledge of the gospel, these divine truths, but some people, again, in this view, are not worthy of those treasures, and as such, we need to be on the lookout for them, for these dogs, these pigs. We need to watch out for people who might not accept our treasures or use them rightly. They are the pigs and dogs described here, and we should therefore not waste our good things on these worthless or evil people. And I'll just say up front, I think that take is directly opposed to the spirit of Jesus and what he taught. It feels exclusionary, very judgmental, frankly. So I'm not really a fan of that take on this text. Instead, I'd like to offer two other takes, two more kind of facets of the diamond here on this teaching that hopefully might be insightful or helpful for you. The first comes from the philosopher and spiritual formation writer Dallas Willard. I know Jenny's paying attention now. And he basically argues that, Willard does. First off, his take on this is that Jesus is not saying certain classes of people should be viewed as pigs or dogs or anything like that. Instead, Willard says, the issue, the problem here with pearls for pigs, casting your pearls before swine, is not that the pigs are unworthy, but in this metaphor, it's that pearls aren't of any use to pigs. They're not actually helpful for them. So it's not worthiness that is in question here at all, but helpfulness. What's a pig going to do with pearls? They can't digest them, can't eat them. They don't have any use for them. They're not helpful or relevant or life-giving for a pig at all. And so to unpack the metaphor, the point isn't the waste of the pearl, Willard says, but that the person given the pearl is not helped. And in Willard's view, this is a warning about what can happen, and I think this is a good point here. It's a warning about what can happen when our good intentions don't actually match up with someone else's needs. Right? We may think we are helping, but have we actually listened to that person? Have we actually gotten to know them and to uncover what will actually nourish them? Frankly, Willard writes, our pearls often are offered with a certain superiority of bearing. that keeps us from paying attention to those we are trying to help. We have solutions. That should be enough, shouldn't it? And very quickly, some contempt, impatience, anger, and even condemnation slips into our offer. Wow. How often do we see that happen? Especially, if we're honest, especially in churches, right? These very well-intentioned ministries that don't actually meet people's needs. Christians who are, as the saying goes, who are so heavenly minded that they're not of any earthly good. Or how about as Americans, culturally, I think there's a temptation to fall into this trap. We're the wealthiest nation on the planet, right? Surely, if we throw enough money at a problem, we can fix it, right? But sometimes more money isn't what's needed. We're casting our pearls before swine. So that's Willard's take, and I wanted to share it because I didn't get that. I wouldn't have thought that just reading this on my own, and I find that angle really insightful and really, really helpful. But to conclude our time together, though, looking at this passage, I'd like to offer my own personal angle on this. I think I'm pushing 30 minutes right now, so I'm coming to the end of my time. So this one's for free. Think of it as a little bonus content, a little deleted scene at the end here. I did not get this from a theologian or a scholar or anything, so, and I'm not a biblical scholar myself, so feel free to take it or leave it. This is just coming from me and the wisdom I've gained in my now 35 years of life. So here it goes. Here's what I think Jesus is getting at here, or one angle of it at least. I think this teaching is telling us that it's okay to be mindfully, and I would maybe even use the word tactfully, vulnerable. Because in some cases, it simply isn't appropriate to display our pearls to certain people. I'll use the example of teaching again. Working with high school students, teenagers, there are certain vulnerable parts of me as a person, aspects of my personal life, issues I might be personally struggling with, etc., that are not appropriate for me to disclose, right, to my students and in the teacher-student relationship. That doesn't mean I put on a face and totally fake it. It doesn't mean I'm inauthentic. But there are certain things I think it's important to be open and honest about, but of course that has limits, right, of how open, how vulnerable, what things do I, that are, very personal, very tender, very valuable to me, that I disclose to them. So there's that in just a lot of our practical kind of relational dealings where I think this could apply. To use a more extreme example, I think this pearls before swine warning could especially apply to situations of abuse, right? Abusive relationships often happen when someone exposes something precious of their heart, their mind, their body, and the abuser takes advantage of that and turns and tramples on it and devours them. Right? And in those situations, for the person being abused, moving towards healing and freedom actually requires withholding the most tender and holy parts of yourself, right? Having that distance, setting boundaries, right? It's okay for us to have limits and to be careful, to be mindful, to set boundaries with how open and vulnerable we are with people, especially those who may not have kind intentions towards us, simply to protect ourselves. And I think Jesus blesses that and affirms that here. I know elsewhere in the Sermon on the Mount, I think we've already talked about this, he says to turn the other cheek. that's a very specific situation in context. That's about actually holding our head up high and affirming our own human dignity in a very specific situation of injustice. But Jesus does not ask us to subject ourselves to abuse in a way that demeans or dehumanizes us. And so he gives us this metaphor of casting pearls before swine. We don't need to open ourselves up that way. So again, that's just my take. I don't have a pile of scholarly research to back this up. Maybe it's out there somewhere. Someone else has probably said something similar, but yeah, I like reading this teaching as giving us permission for that. I think it helps kind of balance out bring us to a more complete understanding of the Sermon on the Mount, right? Where it's not just I have to give, and burn myself out on trying to follow this or to obey it. There are some cases where it's better to keep your pearls close, right? This radical call to authenticity in the Sermon on the Mount doesn't need to come at the expense of our own well-being or relational health. Just the opposite. It's okay to have boundaries and limits as a Christian. I think Jesus did himself, actually. If you read the Gospels, his love for all was without bounds and absolute and total. But again, if you read the stories and narratives, we see he does limit the degree, the time and place to which he opened himself up to others based on their intentions and their own authenticity. When they're open-hearted, he meets them in that. When they're coming up to set a trap, to catch him, to try to play him false, he doesn't play that game. He doesn't throw his pearls out there. And we can do the same. As Jesus says elsewhere, be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Ben can start to come up. I'll close in prayer here, and we'll conclude. Jesus, our good teacher, thank you for these words, for these hard, challenging words. But I thank you for the beautiful invitation in them to fullness, to healing, to integrity. Give us courage. To live these out, give us wisdom, and fill us with love just as we have been loved by you. Amen. All right.